This is Faster, a podcast by Flow Cycling. In each episode, we interview industry experts to educate you, challenge you, and even change the way you train so you become faster. Hey, welcome back to Faster. This is your host, John Thornham. I just finished a podcast interview with Dr. Peter Martoni. Very interesting conversation about the position of your spine during sleep. Now, we've had Dr. Winter on the show a couple times talking about sleep. In a recent episode, he came back on to talk more about that. And what was interesting is I've not really ever heard or had anybody talk about the position of your body during sleep and how that impacts performance. So Dr. Martoni and I talk about a number of things, and primarily how the positions that we believe are comfortable to sleep are really positions that make us feel safe. So he has a product called the Neck Nest, and he talks about improving sleep by improving the posture of your body at nighttime. So all fascinating stuff. It leads into performance and how it impacts the psoas and discs. He's a seasoned mountain biker and blew out a herniated disc as a chiropractor kinesiologist, and just kind of left him dumbfounded as how that could happen knowing so much. And it all came back to his spine during sleep. So listen to this episode if you want to become faster by improving the position of your spine during sleep, and we'll see you soon. When we're not creating this podcast, we're working on other ways to make you faster. At Flow, we design and manufacture some of the world's fastest cycling wheels that we sell consumer direct to keep more money in your pockets. As a special thank you for listening to Faster, we wanted to offer you 20% off your next purchase. Simply use coupon code PODCAST in all capital letters at checkout. Your purchase will also support our give back initiatives. 1% of all sales supports our Bike for a Kid program, where we provide bikes and helmets for kids in need. We also plant one tree for every wheel we ship as a thank you to our planet. Enjoy the show. Dr. Peter Martoni, welcome to Faster. How are you doing?
I love it. I love it. I want to be faster. So let's figure it out.
Let's get it. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Today, we're going to talk about some cool stuff, cervical spine and posture during sleep. We've had a sleep expert on the show. So excited to talk about this. This is something that we've not covered and I actually don't know a ton about. So give us a little bit about your background and how you got into cervical spine care.
Yeah, well, this is great. I'm a kinesiologist, which is the study of biomechanics. I was a professional trainer in Australia. And then I went to chiropractic school, was working on patients for years and years. But I myself had always had back pain. And guess what I attributed it to? Rock climbing and mountain biking, because I am a competitive mountain biker. Yeah. I will actually be mountain biking after this podcast tonight, every Tuesday night, Sunday, Saturdays, like to do at least three times a week. And I always had attributed my back pain to, you know what, I can help other people with pain, but I myself, I'm just very athletic and, you know, and I do all these bending over things and I'm bending over patients all day. So I always had pain, and which would always hinder, especially as I increased my performance on the bike, it would always limit me somewhat. So it wasn't until about 13 years ago now, I actually herniated my own disc. My disc ruptured and my entire leg was numb. I'm in the emergency room. I'm thinking, how can it come to this? I know so much about biomechanics. I'm helping all these other people. And I, myself, am in the emergency room not knowing if I'm going to need surgery for a herniated disc that I just had. So I reviewed 3,000 x-rays, found that the problem wasn't in my back. I found that it was compensation to something else. And I figured, you know what? Holy mackerel. I can fix this at night when I'm sleeping. So then I started to become a really geek out on how sleeping position and posture can change the entire structure of your spine.
Wow. Okay. So I've always been kind of interested in this. I'm a mechanical engineer, so I think about structures a lot. I think about that sort of thing. And oftentimes I think about laying in bed. You know, some people have broad shoulders, some people have narrow shoulders, people turn with their heads sleeping a certain way, or even if your head's on a pillow. If you really think about the alignment of the spine, I would say a large percentage of the population sleeps with a spine that's not in sort of a neutral position. So how important is having your spine in a neutral position, and what does the neutral position do to the body during sleep versus having a body that's not in a neutral position? Or spine not in neutral position.
Yeah, if we can kind of backtrack a second. If you can understand, most people understand and they believe the body works the same way, that if you build a house in order to build a straight house and have the walls straight, you build a strong foundation and then you work your way up. Well, the body works completely the opposite. It works from the top down. It's called the writing reflex. Your body posture adjusts to your head position. So everything, your entire posture, whether you have a short leg, whether your hips out of alignment, whether you know you're not happy with your forward head posture, whatever it is that you're not happy with, you got to look at how you're holding your head, and that's a learned pattern. And another law, say Davis's law, your tissue can remold based on the stresses applied. Most people look at when they fall asleep, they want to wake up well rested, they want to wake up, you know, re-energized. But we don't realize is what throws all of that into the trash is if you're messing up your alignment at night when you're sleeping, because the average person will toss and turn 20 to 30 times a night because their body is in pain. And you're in pain because you think you're sleeping in the right position because you think you feel comfortable. You're not comfortable, you feel protected, but that's not a sustainable position. So your at-night sleeping posture is actually destroying the structure of your spine because you're told to sleep in these curled up, you know, on your side lying protected positions.
Okay. So let's say that we are sleeping in that sort of position. What are the negative impacts that can happen to the body because we don't have a neutral spine?
Well, looking at you through the screen, your head translates to your left side. So because your head translates to the left side, your body, your hip's going to go to the opposite side. So you're going to stand like this, and you're going to pick that all the way up to a psoas major muscle spasm and more than likely an old ankle sprain on the right side because it's going to limit your rotation to the left. Then because of that head translation, you pick up a vagus nerve issue, which most people that have issues with their digestive tract or the issues with, like, let's say, a rapid heart rate, you know, and they can't fix. All of that stuff is directly related to head translation that is being caused at night weight sleep.
Okay. Okay.
I probably
so
didn't even answer
when
my
you
question,
get
but
so that's one thing that can happen. What are other symptoms that you can get from a spine that's out of a neutral position at nighttime?
Well, what you're going to see is you're going to see body posture adjusting to head position. You're going to have hip pain, back pain, shoulder pain. So impingement syndromes in the arm, hip bursitises, you know, labrum tears, because the body can only lie in this this side sleeping position for a certain period of time, and then you're going to flip. And once you start tossing and turning in the middle of the night, you are not in control with where you end up. And you're just going to end up in a position shifting all night long. And then when you look at somebody, the way somebody stands, you can see that the way that they're sleeping at night, because their structure is being pushed, their sinus cavities get closed down, it compresses airways. Because if you put a weight on somebody's, let's say, face, which is head on a pillow, for hours and hours and hours and hours, you push in those maxillary sinuses and cause breathing issues.
Okay. So what's the ideal position for somebody to sleep? Is it on their back? Is it on their stomach? I mean, what's the ideal posture?
Yeah. So when you're looking at position, you want to sleep in a position where your body weight is distributed over the greatest surface area and that you're in a position that the body can sustain. So I give people the 2-hour movie test, basically, is I say, okay, you sleep on your left side. Okay, great. Oh, you fall asleep on your left side the entire night. That's fantastic. I'm so happy. Try to watch a 2-hour movie in the position that you fall asleep in. And most of the time it's not sustainable because you're going to have to move. Now you're just going to end up somewhere. So it's not what people say, what people think, and what people believe is really not reality. Your reality lies within your neurology. Okay. So what you want to do is you want to be able to lie in a position, and you don't have to become a back sleeper. We have the 10-minute sleep ritual, which you're only in control with how you fall asleep. And you want to give your body the best chance to be able to have a great night's sleep and prevent tossing and turning and all these things. So you put yourself in a neutral position, put a pillow under your neck. We created something called the neck nest, but you can use a pillow on its edge instead of using flat. You can't put a pillow under your head because anytime you support something, like if you support the head without another stress applied to it, you're going to end up losing the curve and you're going to close down your airway. So you want to put a pillow under your neck so your neck arches back and the weight of your head is actually over the back of the pillow so that you're using the weight of your head as like a weight to cause some distraction within the neck. So it gently stretches the curve back into your neck. Then you want to lie down with your hands down by your side, out of the covers, and then have your feet out of the covers down below.
Okay. So how much of your the posture that you carry during the day is related to the position you sleep in at night versus what you're doing during the day? I think of like some younger people, I think they call it like
tech neck
where they have their heads in that always in that forward position. Are you saying that that's related more to their sleeping posture versus how, what they're doing during the day, or is it a combination of both?
It's a combination of both. But what happens at night is you're reinforcing the damaging effect of the modern day lifestyle, right? So if you're going to have forward head posture, you have to stretch that neck back at night. If not, you're going to have this all day long. So if you're texting, you can stretch it back at night, but then you also have to work on balance to recenter the vestibular system or the balance system, because remember, body posture adjusts to what? Head position. So now that you're stretching that neck back at night, then you want to work on balance with the head upright so the body creates a new center of gravity, which holds the neck into position.
Okay. So I think about cyclists. You know, cyclists have a, I would argue in some situations, a pretty bad posture sitting on the bike for hours at a time over the handlebars. Obviously, there's strength training things you can do to help counteract some of that. But posture at nighttime is also beneficial to help counteract some of the riding position during the day.
Yeah. So what I found after I reviewed those 3,000 x-rays is, remember, body posture adjusts to head position. So when your head comes forward, this is something that is known and is what we found, is that there's a reactive psoas major muscle spasm with forward head posture. The psoas major is the only muscle in the human body that attaches directly to a disc. So as the head comes forward, you actually cause depressurizing of the disc from that psoas major muscle spasm, compensating. It's what it's doing is twisting the spine. So when you have that forward head posture, what's complicated is through cyclists. So cyclists have psoas major muscle issues anyways. So if you're coupling that by sleeping on your side, curled up and twisted, it's just a matter of time, like it was in my case, that you either damage the low back disc, have a hip that's out of alignment, or you blow a disc and then your leg goes numb like me.
And is that what happened to you? You had a psoas issue, which created the disc issue?
Yes, I didn't realize I had the psoas issue because there was no pain here. But when I looked at the x-rays, as the head comes forward, in 90% of the cases of these 3,000 x-rays, right, so 1,500 people, because what I did is I looked at cervical and compared it to lumbar. As the head comes forward, the hip does this. I always thought, and I had always worked on my own quadratus lumborum, so I always worked on the QLs, right? Because you leaned over the bike and always hammering those QLs. Well, the agonist, there are muscles that are called agonist and antagonist. So if I do this, the agonist is the bicep, the antagonist is the tricep. They work in conjunction with each other. So the agonist to the quadratus is the psoas. And I was like, holy mackerel, could it be my psoas? And I remembered back in school that a teacher saying, the psoas major is the only muscle in the human body attaches directly to a disc. That's it. Then I started researching, what's the reason for the attachment? And nothing exists in the literature on that reasoning. So I started diving into it and really understanding the psoas. And then what causes that psoas major muscle spasm? What is it reacting to? It can't react to another muscle, right? It's reacting to the vestibular response of the forward head posture.
So what do you think the reason is? Did you come up with a reason why you think it's connected directly to the disc?
So when you're looking at, let's say, fingers, right? The more nerve endings in an area, the more sensation, the more feedback you have back into the brain. So when you're looking at the lower back, the tight QLs, always thinking, yeah, they're spinal stabilizers. That must be where all the neurons are that it's reacting to. Well, then I'm like, wait a second. If you're caught, if you have nerve endings going into the disc from a muscle, that doesn't happen anywhere. I think the QL is a minion. It's only reacting to something else. So then I theorize that the reactive postural issues is coming from the psoas, not the QL. That once I started working on that, bringing the head back, it's how it worked. Now, when I work on somebody's disc or in my practice, or I work on somebody's low back, I go right through the stomach and work on the psoas. When I'm working with forward head posture.
So are you still practicing as a chiropractor? Are you still doing chiropractic work?
3 days a week, yeah.
Okay. So how does your understanding now of head position and all that stuff, especially when working with an athlete, how does that impact the way that you treat them
take somebody's intake, and I call it the reverse intake. So I saw a few new patients this morning. I can take their intake and put it face down. I don't even need them to tell me what's going on that anymore. I can look at them and tell them because I've come up with a blueprint. I call it the neurostructural protocol, but it's a blueprint of being able to look at somebody. And what you tell me is that's a distorted perception of reality because you're intaking through your senses and then you're feeling one way and then you're telling me something. Like what all your MDs tell you or what you think is going on and how we structure the muscle. Truth lies within your neurology because neurology adapts under specific laws. So if you can look at somebody, you can look past their symptomatology and get at the root cause of the problem, which more than likely has stemmed from a lifestyle habit that they've been doing for years and years and years. And a lot of that stuff adapts to when you were a kid. So most people that have, let's say, digestion issues or breathing issues or heart arrhythmias, had ear infections as a kid because of that forward head posture has been there since a young age.
So you really focus on the forward head posture. That's a major issue.
Forward head posture, atlas lateralization, and then lifestyle, and putting those together.
And so if somebody comes in, let's say they have a forward head posture, some tilt on the head. What are you doing during a chiropractic session? Are you doing an adjustment? Are you working soft tissue? How are you helping them to improve?
Soft tissue, 100% of the times, are minions. They're always being told what to do, right? So when you look at muscles, without an innervation from a nerve, the muscle's flaccid. So the muscle is being told what to do through neurological patterns. So basically, I explain this to my patients. Here's your spine. Let's say your spine's like hardened clay. Chiropractic care is like taking your clay and putting it in water. If I hold your clay in water, what does that do to the clay? Makes it more moldable.
Soft, right?
But now it's up to you to expose that clay to different mold and restructure it. That's where the neurological patterns come in. That's where the lifestyle habits come in. That's why if I owned how you fall asleep, and I can potentially own that time that you have in bed, I can restructure anybody's spine because I can take your 8 hours that you're already sleeping and I can rechange your neurological adaptation while you sleep.
Okay. That makes some sense. So one thing I've heard in the past too, I talked to a chiropractor years ago who was talking about how all the different nerves that come off the spine, some of them go to the liver, some of them go to the gut, some of them go to all different parts of the body. And they're saying that if you have impingement in some of those, and I'm assuming based on head position and spine position, that the impingements of those nerves can cause issues in things like the gut or the liver. What is your stance on that? And how much of that do you think is related to performance and sleep?
So you have two systems in your body. One's called the sympathetic system, which is what is engaged when you are exercising. Then you have the parasympathetic system, which is basically plug-in time at night. So you have rest and digest and survive and thrive. And so those two systems really are opposites. So when you're surviving, you're suppressing thrive. And when you're thriving, you're suppressing survive. So the three systems that are controlled, that control the system that control the parasympathetic nervous system, which is your Thrive system, controls three specific systems: immune system, digestive system, and reproductive system, hormonal balance. So when you're running from a tiger, you can't eat a sandwich at the same time because it's going to shut down that system. Now, when you look at Thrive, if you're running all the time, your body's just going to pass out because you need that recharge. So you have to be able to plug back in. 85% of your entire Thrive nervous system, digestive health, immune system health, and reproductive health, all stems from the vagus nerve, which comes right out from underneath the occiput. So when you lose the structure of the cervical curve, the vagus nerve comes right out from up here. You compress the parasympathetic nervous system, suppressing digestion, immune system, and reproductive system. So the role of cervical alignment within the overall health and adaptation and repair and recharge is critically important when you're talking about exercise and endurance and improving optimization of health.
So how much did your mountain biking change after you learned about this? I mean, you were a mountain biker before, you're a mountain biker now. What are the big changes that you've seen since you've realigned your spine?
Well, I have no pain after biking. Like if I bike 3 days in a row, normally I'd have like stiffness in my lower back. I'd have to take off a few days and I'd have to, you know, stretch it out. It would just always be stiff. So that's gone. I have no back pain at all. I mean, maybe if I, you know, fall skiing or something like that. That's the only thing. And I used to have a labrum tear. That labrum tear, I don't have any issues anymore at all. My labrum, I could go for a run on my labrum and I wouldn't have a problem. So my pain significantly decreased. Also, my energy levels are through the roof. The amount of my performance during the day, you know, I run three companies, from the beginning, from when I wake up right out of bed to when I go to sleep, I have energy throughout the whole day. I feel like I'm a machine. I'm like, I'm an energizer bunny because I recharge so much at night, and my heart rate variability scores, I don't know how tied in people are to.
Yeah. HRV. Yeah, sure.
Just by changing the position that I slept, my HRV scores improved by 30%.
Do you use like a sleep tracker?
I do.
And so when you sleep track and let's say you get a night of sleep where you have bad posture in bed versus optimal posture in bed, you're saying your sleep score decreases on when you have bad posture.
In general, right? As an overall thing. So we did a few different tests anecdotally. We have, you know, thousands of people within our sleep systems and have used our products, and actually 10,000, over 10,000. So right now, when I have people do something, okay, I want you to put pressure over your eyes and I want you to monitor your HRV readings, your quality of sleep. The two things that have made the biggest difference in improving HRV readings at night was becoming a back sleeper, starting on your back with a pillow under your neck, improving the structure of the curve, and using pressure directly on your eyes, stimulating the parasympathetic nervous system to promote protection and safety.
Talk about more about the pressure on the eyes. How does, what does that look like? Are you talking like a mask, or what would you do to put pressure on the eyes?
I had one here. Oh yeah, yeah. Easy, right? So just take a little sleep mask and then just use pressure on your eyes. I use a pillow over my head a lot of times, so I have that pressure on my eyes. I would say, because I looked at pressure on the eyes as stimulating the vagus nerve, and that's not one of the things that comes up. But the way that I have theorized is that if you're an ostrich and you stick your head in the ground, that darkness, safety, and pressure, they feel safe. So when people are curled up into balls, they feel safe. When somebody lies on their back and they try to fall asleep, they feel exposed. That's why the weighted blankets work, because when you use pressure, you're creating safety, you're stimulating parasympathetic tone. So when I started using pressure on the eyes, it just amplified that safety response for people.
Okay. So when you are in that, let's say you're sleeping like you're suggesting, are you getting more deep sleep? Is there a certain cycle of the sleep phase that you're getting more of? What are you getting more of?
More deep sleep.
More deep sleep. So there's more recovery and more things happening there. Very interesting. So you did mention earlier when we were talking here that you don't need to become a back sleeper. If you don't become a back sleeper, what are you, you're saying you're falling asleep on your back, but your body's then moving to another position? Or are there other options for people if they don't like sleep? Like personally, like if I lay in my side, I fall asleep in 2 minutes. If I lay on my back, I lay there for like 30 minutes. I can't fall asleep.
Okay.
So I've always felt like that's the case. So how does that work for somebody that doesn't feel like they're a back sleeper?
That's great. Can you do me a favor? You're looking in the mirror. I mean, you're looking in a screen, right? Just make a circle and then just look at me through that circle into the camera.
Okay.
And bring it back to your eye. Okay, good. All right, good. You can pick the microphone back up. Good. Are you right-handed or left-handed?
Right.
And then if you were to kick a ball, would you kick a ball with your right foot or your left foot?
Right.
Okay, good. So now somebody like you, all you have to do, the reason why you feel that you can't, you like to sleep on your side because you're basically falling asleep in a position that you feel protected. That's it, right? You feel safe.
Okay.
And that's how the body feels comfortable. It's not comfortable, but it's safe. So when you lie on your back, you don't have the positioning right, more than likely, first of all, but you feel like you're falling backwards. If I look at you, most people that can't fall asleep on their back, if you look from the side view, they lean forward. They're constricted in the frontal plane because body posture is adjusting to that head position. So if we take a look at your hips and then we look at your psoas, we're going to see a psoas spasm on one side. Which side? I can't tell by looking at you right now, but there would be one. So when you fall asleep on your back, it's not because you don't like that position. It's just your body doesn't feel comfortable. So knowing that, knowing why it doesn't feel comfortable, the lifestyle habit, we all like to be in control. You're not in control once you fall asleep. Your subconscious is in control. You're only in control within the first 10 minutes of your ritual and falling asleep. After that, the body takes over. So we just have to set you up so you can at least just fall asleep on your back. And then don't try not to control the rest of the night. Just let it happen. So the consistency, we're a product of our daily rituals. So if you want same problems, you continuously do the same things. And if we want structural imbalances, you continue to sleep on your side. And because there's no other way, if you're going to sleep 8 hours going from side to side, you can't put those forces against the joints through this plane and expect to have healthy cervical and back structure. It won't happen.
Okay, so let's say you want to become a back sleeper and you're saying that you put something under the neck. How large of an item are you putting under your neck? Obviously you have the neck nest, so maybe, but everyone has a different body shape, body size. So how do you optimize the size of the thing you're putting under the neck?
Well, so within our programs, we teach that a lot of times people aren't going to be able to lie down flat at first because, you know, there's a lot of adaptation that has happened from curling up like this. So when you sleep, you know, there's going to be pulling on the ribs. There's going to be, you know, the back's going to be sore. So the first thing that you do is you want to, let's say, a good transition, get by like a bed wedge and get like a slight elevation, right? Maybe a 6-inch bed wedge or a 5-inch bed wedge. So you're sleeping slightly elevated, put something under your legs slightly, right? So you bend your knees. So you're not sleeping completely flat. The angle of your head is extremely important. You want your head about a 1/2 inch off of the bed. Okay. So you want it like suspended into a specific position. And then that way you'll be able to have that head off of the back in gently, you know, stretching that curve into your neck.
So you're saying your head doesn't even touch the mattress?
Nope, not at all. Is this going to be a video or is this an audio?
Audio.
Okay. So I'll show you. So you, I won't be able to hear you. So you explain what I'm doing. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, sure.
Here we
yeah,
go.
Yeah.
All right. So first thing I'm going to do.
All right.
Do,
so he's getting set up.
Take this here. Put the neck nest there. Hold on.
He's got his neck nest pillow. All right, there he goes. All right, okay, so he's laying down. He's got the neck nest under there, and his head is not really touching anything. Okay, yeah, makes sense. I see it.
All right, you get it?
Yeah, I got it. It's pretty
easy.
Cool.
Right? It's easy. Unbelievable, because once your head is in that unweighted position, like it would when you first thing people say, the number one thing, I can't do that. There's no way I can sleep like that. Okay, that's fine. I don't need you to sleep like that. Just lie like that for an hour a night. That's it. Because then your neck is in 1 hour of traction. And then maybe the hope is you fall asleep like that. And it's 2 hours until you toss and turn and you do whatever you want. But if the lifestyle habit is such where you fall, I get sleep apnea, I'll snore. That's fine. 1 hour a night. I don't care if you have sleep apnea, if you have, you know, constipation, diarrhea, it doesn't matter. Just stay in that position for 1 hour a night, reversing the damage effect of, you know, being on your phone all day long, being at a computer, it being on the bike. Everything we do is forward head posture. And nobody's teaching our culture how to reverse that. And that is why I've become a structural expert in the bed, because it's so... You know, people, you know more about recharging and repair and the specific, you know, cycles of the brain and what affects those. But nobody knows more about posture and structure and how that affects function. And I just want to own how you fall asleep. Do whatever the hell you want in the middle of the night.
So why is it that people that sometimes lay on their back, they snore, they have apnea when they're on their back versus on their side? Why does that happen?
Well, there are a few different things for apnea. The airways closing down, their chin's tucked, they have their weight, they're overweight, so the airway closes down this way. They've never been taught how to breathe correctly with their tongue sucked up to the roof of their mouth so it doesn't fall backwards. There's so many different reasons for apnea. And there are a lot of different cures for it also. Especially, and it will get worse if you don't know how to manage it when you're sleeping on your back. So you have to know about airway management. There are certain things that you really should take into consideration, especially if you have apnea. But you know, with the amount of time that we have, all I would say is you start on your back for an hour a night. And then you get that neck arched back, take your tongue, focusing on keeping your mouth shut by sucking the tongue to the roof of your mouth. And if you have an issue, when you fall asleep, you can take a pillow like I do and put it under your chin. And that'll hold your mouth shut.
Okay. Right? Yeah, I saw something recently. Someone was actually taping their mouth closed during sleep to help with breathing. I thought that was interesting. I've never seen somebody do that before. Let's talk a little bit about mattresses and mattress types. There's hard mattresses, firm mattresses, Tempur-Pedics. You've got memory foam. You've got spring mattresses. Water beds were a thing years ago. I've seen some people more now with water beds again. What's your belief on a mattress and mattress type?
How much does the mattress actually matter if your weight is distributed over the greater surface area? Is much, much, much less than if you're a side sleeper. So the problem is our mattresses are becoming more and more comfortable for unsustainable positions, holding you in that position longer. So the more comfortable the mattress, the more problems it's causing because you're staying in a position that's distorting the structure of your spine longer. So I'm not a big fan of to me, if you don't like your mattress, just put a topper on it, right? should be, you know, you should have a stiffer mattress. Like, so we bought a lake house and the bed was there. They said, oh, it's a new bed. It's a great mattress. I laid on it. I hated it. So I just put two toppers on it because I didn't like the first topper. So we bought another topper and put that on it. So my topper is like this thick, but it's great because it's just, it distributes my weight great across a hard surface area, which is where your best support is.
So does body type, I've often wondered this, does your body type or your body shape impact the mattress? If somebody's very lean and thin, I feel like a firmer mattress would allow them to have a more neutral spine. If somebody's larger or has like a larger midsection, a softer mattress would allow sort of them to absorb into the mattress more, creating a more neutral spine. Is there any impact on body shape related to spine position?
So how familiar are you with the term, if you don't use it, you lose it?
Very.
Okay. So what does that mean? Let's like think about that, because, you know, if we think about this correctly, you'll be able to answer that question. So that tells us whenever you add support to anything in the body, do you strengthen it or weaken it? You're going to weaken it.
Weaken it.
Absolutely, without a doubt. So anytime you use a supportive force long-term in the body, you're going to weaken whatever you're supporting. So when we have back support, or we have beds that support our backs more, and we have all these things that support, when you get out of that that position, you're going to, if I hold the curve of your head and the curve of your neck at the same time all night long, like a lot of cervical supports do, and then I let go, the curve drops, right? Because it doesn't need it, like a suspension bridge. You hold up a suspension bridge too high, it's going to weaken. It's the actual support that strengthens it. I mean, it's the actual stress of gravity that strengthens it. So when you put your back on the bed, there's a natural arch in your back that you don't want to support. You want that arch to stay like that over a period of time. So then you would say, well, then what about not even using a pillow and just putting your head on the bed? That can actually work. But most people have so much cervical dysfunction that they can't do that. So what you want to do is you want to put something under the neck, remember, but don't support the head. Why? Because we want the traction of the neck off the back of the pillow to be the stress that stretches the curve into the neck.
Okay. How important is temperature for all this and getting somebody comfortable in the sleep? I know there's mattresses out there, Eight Sleep. A lot of people recommend having low temperatures. Does heat have any impact on the performance of sleep during the night when you're trying to get in to change your sleep position?
Yeah, so heat's our second pillar in the five pillars of sleep. So the reason why heat is so important is everything, like, what do people want? People want more production during the day, more energy during the day. Well, how do you get that? You got to repair, recharge, and realign at night while you're sleeping. Well, that repair and recharge, that happens in a specific, to repair and recharge the body, that happens in a specific type of sleep called deep sleep. So in order for your body to get into deep sleep, your core temperature needs to drop about 2 degrees. So in order for your core temperature to drop 2 degrees, you can't be digesting food. You can't be metabolizing, like you can't just come in when your metabolism's high from exercise because your core temperature's elevated. You can't have a high heart rate. You can't have a high respiratory rate. So there are very specific things that need to occur for you to get very deep restorative sleep. And deep sleep happens within the first third of your sleep cycle, which is typically when your body's the warmest from our crappy lifestyles that we've done, because we don't realize how that stuff translates into the first beginning half of sleep. Then as our body digests, as we detoxify after 2 a.m., as all of these things happen, then our core temperature falls. Then you only get a little deep sleep. Then you get all this rapid eye movement, this REM rebound. You're remembering your dreams. You have these cool, vivid dreams, but you wake up exhausted. and it's because of your core temperature. So understanding that core temperature needs to drop is critically important.
Okay, good. That's awesome. One thing I want to say is you're talking about the performance of your performance improved. One question that we ask everybody that comes on the show is we call it our watt point question. We base it on somebody has like a 300 watt FTP, and if they've been getting poor sleep at night due to posture, and then they want to improve that sleep, they go through your sleep program that you're talking about, and they've improved their sleep. How much of a performance improvement could they make? And maybe we look at you because you came from a pretty beat up state to restoring it. How much would you say that you've improved your mountain biking performance from a percent perspective since correcting your spine and psoas and all those issues?
Well, that's actually a really great question. Now you got my scientific brain thinking in like this engineering way. So I'm going to try to be very, very brief, but I would love, to be able to test wattage, especially as an exercise physiologist, that's a great way. That's a great research thing for me to do. I love it because that's sustainable. So I would say now anecdotally, because I don't have that specific wattage, I don't track my wattage, but it definitely improved without a question 10 to 15%. Now, okay, if you use just pressure on your eyes and you increase your state of repair 30%, I would say that it would probably be more than that.
Okay, cool. Listen, this is super cool. Like I said, I didn't know much about this coming into this, but I'm definitely happy that we had you on the show. Tell us a little bit more about where people can learn about you. If they want to, you say you have their five pillars of sleep, you have your sleep products. Where can they find out more about you and get involved if they want to?
Yeah, they can follow me on Instagram at drsleepright.com, drsleepright, or go to drsleepright. On Instagram at Dr. Sleepright, or they can kind of check out drsleepright.com. In there, you'll see our programs and then our products, and you'll be able to, grab whatever fits right for you.
And do you work with people remotely if they're having questions or anything like that about the programs, or are you all in person?
So we're all the sleep stuff. We're starting a membership, and the membership will get access to me once a month in a group setting where we implement specific things and then make different changes throughout the whole community.
Awesome. Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you being on the show. This is awesome. A wealth of knowledge. And thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Faster. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it. Leave a review or teach a friend what you learned today. For more great episodes on getting faster, subscribe to this podcast. While you're on your next ride, be kind to one another and ride safe.